And welcome everyone to a brand new episode of the DKP here at WrestlingObserver.com and F4WOnline.com. I am, of course, as always, your host, Alan, and we are continuing our Year in Review series. We have got a new addition to the Year in Review series, not just with the person joining me on the line, but also the topic. We have never before done a standalone show in the Year in Review series for this topic. This year, quite simply, had to be done. Couldn't be ignored. European wrestling, yes, deserves its own show after the incredible 2015 that European wrestling had. It's quite frankly taking over the world of wrestling. Everywhere you look, there's an impact being felt, excuse the pun, by European wrestling. And the man who I've got on the line to discuss it with me is the man who's been writing about European wrestling ever since the turn of the year for the F4W newsletter. He is the man that writes for Tag Rope magazine. He is the man that writes for Voice of Wrestling. He is a man who, as will probably become a theme over the next few years on this show, makes me feel extremely old. It's Holly Court. Holly, how are you, sir?
Yeah, I've been writing about European wrestling for over a year now on Voices of Wrestling and other places. And like last year was really the year that it took off and like got a lot of buzz internationally. And the top guys, the stars of European wrestling, have been getting international acclaim, like going over to America, going to Japan, and like tearing shows down and just making fans out of everyone around the world. So it's very exciting to be talking about it with you.
Yeah, it sure is. And I don't know, we've got a few choices where we could start with things. There's plenty of candidates that had great years, but I think I'm going to start with Progress for no reason other than I just decided right now at this very moment to Progress. So let's go with that. And a promotion, for those that aren't familiar, started about 3-4 years ago now, 2012 I think it was. Really got their feet under, or their wheels under them quite quickly. When you look at some other promotions like ICW, which famously talked about how they'd go years where they'd be drawing like 10 people to shows and stuff like this. Progress really kind of, like, it wasn't like they were putting 700 people in right from the start, but they were pretty much filling up the small venue that they ran, the garage in Islington, on a pretty consistent basis right from the start. The shows were pretty good. The shows were getting good reviews. They were using good guys, having good matches. And really, in the last 2-3 years, they've taken it to... Actually, I shouldn't say that much. The last 1-2 years, they've really taken it to a new level, moving to the Electric Ballroom in Camden as their main venue. 700 people sold out every single time, selling out within minutes when the on-sales happen. And, Progress is a promotion that's hot right now. To me, it feels... I made this comparison when I wrote about them in 2014, when I went over for the first ever Thunder Bastard show. And I wrote a big article about my experience there and just basically Progress existence up to that point. And I kind of was viewing it then as very early Ring of Honor. It really felt like you kind of had your Ospreay or your Mark Andrews in like the Paul London role. You had Jimmy Havoc as Christopher Daniels. Rampage Brown or Dave Mastiff was like your Samoa Joe, and it just kind of felt like it had that kind of early Ring of Honor feel. And I think now in the past year or so, it's really picked up even more, and it feels like how Ring of Honor picked up in its next couple of years, where you started having hype for things being match of the years, like the Joe versus Punk series, things like that. Joe versus Kobashi, moving to bigger buildings, expanding across the country. Ring of Honor starting to do Chicago shows, to me, feels very much like Progress starting to do Manchester shows. I really am seeing this kind of similar path with Progress compared to the first couple of years of Ring of Honor, and it's quite encouraging. 2015 was a hell of a year from start to finish, and really a year or two halves in a lot of ways, the first half being very much still focused on Jimmy Havoc as champion and Will Ospreay's chase, the second half being focused on Will Ospreay having won the belt and becoming this sort of valiant babyface, taking on all-comers champion and having a series of great title defenses. So when you think progress in 2015, Avi, what kind of is the first thing that comes to mind for you?
I would probably, you said that it's almost like a year of two halves, and I find it very impressive that they managed to keep up the quality of their shows despite having such like a dramatic change from focusing their top stories on Jimmy Havoc and his like takeover of the show and the Progress title, and having Will Ospreay chase him. That was the build for the first 7 months of the year. Their first show started with, their first show had the title match between Havoc and Ospreay, which Havoc won, because Ospreay, they were doing the story where he was too afraid to hit his finisher after he legitimately, nearly seriously injured himself hitting Bat 630 on a different show. I think it was a Southside show back in 2014, and they played that into the story and really played off of the psychological aspect of Havoc saying that Ospreay was a coward and couldn't beat him psychologically. So they had to build Ospreay up to that big victory. He had to go through the tournament, which is another thing we'll talk about in a minute. And then he had to beat him in the no DQ environment to finally put away Havoc for good, and what, like a final boss battle almost between Havoc and Ospreay. They built that story so well. It was one of my favorite feuds of the year, if not my favorite. And that really highlighted the first half of the year. And then they let Havoc cool off. They've sent him away for a while to cool off the character, having like dominated the shows for 2 years or so. They needed to have a break from him. And Ospreay, like you said, took the mantle, took the Progress Championship, and had some killer matches with Mark Haskins and Paul Robinson and others over the belt, and really took control of the second half of the year. So it's very impressive that they managed to do two different things, centered around Will Ospreay, yes, but two very different kinds of stories with him, both chasing the heel champion and being the champion himself, coming of age and defending the title against some of the best in Britain. So that was really good that they were able to make that change and not have a drop-off of quality. And also, another thing that comes to mind when I think of Progress in 2015, I think of their run of three shows, which were just really, really special. Chapter 19, Part 2, which was the end of the Super Strong Style 16 tournament. Chapter 20, where Will Ospreay and Jimmy Havoc had the big no DQ title match, which Ospreay won, and then Chapter 21, where Will Ospreay took on Mark Haskins in a really fantastic match, one of the best matches of the year.
Yeah, it's interesting you talk about those like a three show series, because I kind of feel there's like a big separation in there between the Super Strong Style 16, and then the title match, which kind of felt like this show on an island in the middle of the summer. And then coming out of that, you had the start of the run of shows with Ospreay as champion. So it was like a three-show series, but it was kind of like the last show of one section, then the show on an island, and then this show, which is the beginning of the next section. And it's amazing that they were able to have those three shows come together and really anchor their year so well right in the middle like that. For me, the Chapter 21, I guess, that was the September show, right?
Yeah.
For me, that really kicked off just... I was so impressed by how good Ospreay was as champion. I wasn't sure that he'd be able to take that role and that it would work. It just didn't seem like... When he won the title from Havoc, I was like, he needed to win the title. It made sense to close the story. But it almost felt like when Homicide won the title in ROH, and I was like, you need to get it right off him, because he's not the guy to be the champion defending the belt. And now Will has lost that belt now as of January, but he still got, like, I don't know, five defenses in there?
And I think he had defenses, yeah.
Yeah, like that's really, he did a really great job in that time. Every defense was different, I would say. Every defense was really good, and he came across like the ace of a company, which is really difficult for a guy of his style, like a high flyer. It's how many pure high flyers, and that's really what he is still at this stage of his career, have been a successful, credible ace of a company. And how many people only 3 years into their career have been a successful, credible ace of their company?
Yeah, so he had like incredible composure for a guy that young and a guy with that style. Like, it, maybe you didn't expect him to be that good at carrying the company and being the main event guy who people came to see, but he definitely nailed it with those, like, the four matches, and especially the Haskins one.
Yeah, like, I've talked about the Haskins match. I've called it the best match between two British wrestlers ever. And it's better than any World of Sport I've ever seen. I know that opinion irks some people, but I'm sorry, it is. And it's better than any match I've seen for the guys of this era. And I've talked about what an incredible match it is, but what I haven't really mentioned about it is just how important it was to establishing Ospreay, and because I think Haskins deserves credit for really being able to put together a match like that, which really got Will over as an ace in the way that he did come across in that, because you had to have that first defense not only be a good one, but it had to make Will come across a certain way, and that's exactly what it did. And then the following defense against Paul Robinson, I think I'm like definitely the high grader on that one. I haven't seen it get near enough praise as I think it deserves. I thought it was an absolutely fabulous match, and a heel performance by Robinson, who, for those who've never seen this guy, he's like 5'4", 5'5". He's got to be like, he'd be in the UFC, is it the flyweight division, the really small guys? He'd be in that division if he was an MMA fighter. He's just tiny, like 115, 120 pounds, I'd say at most. But he comes across as a more vicious, credible, aggressive heel than guys who are like 6'6" and 350 pounds. He was fantastic in this match, just all over Ospreay, not giving him even a second to breathe in the match, just taking it to him the whole time. And it he came across like a monster, and he's so tiny, like I said. But Ospreay's comebacks, the way Ospreay had to just eke out a victory because of just how much Robinson was putting him under pressure, I thought was really good. And then the following month, coming up against Mark Andrews, and those guys, of course, have been stealing the show around the world. Not this weekend, but they had been stealing the show around the world up to this point, and they get to have what was, I would say, if the PWG match they had was like their best possible 12-minute match, this was that stretched out to 22, 23 minutes, whatever it was, and just went even to a bigger, more epic level. What did you think of the Andrews and the Robinson matches?
The Andrews and Ospreay match. I feel like it was one of the best matches of its kind ever that I've ever seen. Like, I'm not a big fan of Lucha, so I really know if that kind of spot fest style has been like completely blown away there, but certainly from what I've seen, Ospreay and Andrews are two of the best in the world at using, like, being so creative and just being able to use their bodies in ways that, like, you almost can't even believe that they can make those sequences happen. And they got very creative in this match, like a few sequences where they're attempting moves like DDTs and then catching each other and throwing them up in the air and hitting ace crushes out of it or whatever. It was pretty crazy. They didn't quite nail all of them. But yeah,
I think they nailed like all but one, and there was one which looked like the most ambitious thing in the world they're trying to do. And it didn't look like it, like, yeah, it didn't like completely fall apart in an embarrassing fashion, but you could just tell that whatever they were going for, it wasn't quite exactly what they wanted.
But considering they nailed everything else up until that point, it was,
you have
to commend them. And also, it wasn't just the spot fest. There was definitely a story to the match whereby both guys did not want the other one to get on the top rope and hit their big maneuver for Ospreay. It's a 6:30 senton for Mark Andrews, the shooting star press.
The Gorge Shoot.
And
but they're also playing off past matches as well, all the way through.
Yeah. They've had a load of matches together for various companies, both recorded and not recorded. So they know each other very, very well. And it's almost like the kind of match that you can take on tour, like Takemichinoku versus Great Sasuke, like, because they know each other so well, they can go to another company like PWG and have that crazy match, where you showcase the style, showcase the two wrestlers in the best way possible.
Yeah, like Dragon Kid versus Masato Yoshino, something like that. Okay, so other progress things. Tag team division this year, I thought some good emphasis put on that. Sumerian Death Squad, Tommy End and Michael Dante, who we'll probably talk about a lot in this show, they had a very good year, both from an in-ring and a character progression point of view. They were beloved guys, with Tommy kind of originally going as a singles in progress, but then when he brought in his buddy Michael Dante to be his partner and they won the titles, crowd were all about that. Really loved these guys, but they've ended the year now kind of bordering on heel territory after they destroyed the equally popular London Riots and took out a commentator, RJ Singh, as well in the process. So they're not gone full heel yet, but you can see it's coming, and they could be now. Progress, one of the issues Progress has as we go through 2016 is there's a lot of heels, and it's going to be difficult to keep everyone strong. And if Sumerian Death Squad are going full blown heel, that will be you'll have to give that attention, and with the likes of the Origin stable, Marty Scurll now the heel champion, Paul Robinson still there, it's going to be tough to kind of give everyone their heat. But
I think there's a chance that they might not turn full heel. They might almost become tweeners, ambiguous. Like I think they've got away from like the dark side of their character. As champions, like, they stopped sort of going into that dark place, I guess, that they have on their website and in the promos and stuff, and they were sort of a bit too happy, so I feel like it was almost like a realignment of the whole Illuminati dark side gimmick kind of thing that they've got going on. So they might not turn full heel. It's definitely something that is very intriguing as we move into this year with the whole series against the Riots, the two singles matches, and then the big tag team match, which is now a TLC match, I believe. So could very well main event chapter 27. They're building it up so much.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely could. That's crazy. I hadn't heard that yet myself, but that will be nuts. And that's one thing I should mention, with me not having heard that. I generally avoid... I generally avoid much of the Progress news, like when they post news updates or match updates. I generally don't even bother to look at it, because what I've found is that it's a promotion that's really enjoyable to just kind of watch show to show without having seen what's going to happen, and just a lot of stuff flows. It's all really well explained and presented logically from show to show, and you can really get sucked in from a storytelling point of view by doing that. So that's definitely been one of the key things which have made me really enjoy the company throughout this year, or last year as I should say. But I mentioned the Origin. I am at the moment hesitantly very high on these guys. I have never really liked Nathan Cruz before. I think Mastiff is someone who I really like a lot of things about. Dave Mastiff, as a wrestler, as a performer, I really like the guy. I think he's an awesome guy, but I've just been thinking for the last year or two, Dave Mastiff needs to start having more really good matches, because if people were to ask me, oh, what do you think of Dave Mastiff? I'd be like, oh, he's awesome. Dave Mastiff, he's really good. And if their next question was, what matches should I see? I'd be like, you should, there's the, so it's like, I like Dave Mastiff, but I can't think of many matches I'd recommend.
Mastiff
like
had a very down year this year since he kind of got caught up in Angle OMDAR, which didn't really go over very well. They sort of tried this whole faux MMA concussion angle, which really did not go down well with me. And then they never even had the blow-off match because Mastiff got injured or something. And then Dar went away before he could even come back. So he got kind of mired. He did have a very good, very quick match with Tommy End at Chapter 17, their first show of the year. It was like a five-minute match, which Mastiff...
Yeah, that was good. I remember
it was
that.
Crazy.
Yeah, Mastiff is very good in little sprints, I'd say. That's where I was kind of feeling on him. And then Zach Gibson is a guy who, from what I've seen, a guy who's kind of just kind of come across my radar now this past year, but kind of pretty good, but not like overly sold on him. And then the fourth guy being El Ligero, who I really liked as a babyface, but I wasn't really sure how he'd be as a heel. But these four have come together, and it's very much a case of the product being greater than the sum of the parts. I think everyone has excelled in their role as part of this heel faction. I think Gibson has really stepped up to the plate and has been awesome since he joined the Origin and has taken his game to a next level. And the focus has really been on him more than anyone else in the group. I don't know if that's just how it will be initially or if that's a long-term plan they have, but he's been the star so far. Ligero is just an amazingly awesome, douchey, annoying little chicken shit heel, which I never would have seen coming. He's fantastic.
And he gets thrown into the crowd pretty much every show, so he gets his comeuppance almost every show, taking these crazy bumps. So.
And I like Dave Mastiff walking around with his hands in his pockets like he's punched Tominawa. So there's that too. The group is it's going well, and I'm curious to see how they'll do next year, I think, or this year.
Gibson has stood out most of the four. He's had more opportunities in like singles matches and promo time to really like get his character across and be more of a dick than he already was, which was already quite a lot. So I think he's doing very well. He's taking the spotlight that he did very well in the Triple Threat Chapter 24 match with Morgan Webster and Ospreay for the title. And like there was a really good, believable near fall where like he shoves Ospreay out of the ring after Ospreay's just hit a shooting star press or something. And everyone's just groaning and, oh, it was a real scene. Like, oh God, Gibson's going to steal this one. And then Webster kicks out and Gibson is uppity about it. I feel like his character is really strong. Ligera's character is really strong. He's taken to being a heel because he has never really played a heel before. So he's like really loving the role. Cruz, I feel, anchors the group a lot. He's confident in his promos. Like I say, Mastiff hasn't had a chance to show what he's about, so hopefully in 2016 he gets more of a chance. And yeah, I'm intrigued as to what they're going to do with the group. Eventually, they're probably going to build up to having another 4-on-4 match, which will hopefully end better than the last one, which had a very bullshitty ending. And they'll get their comeuppance or they won't, or who knows? They could go either way with this group. They could go all the way, get all the titles, or disband pretty quickly. So it's interesting to see where they'll go. And speaking of tag teams, the Sumerian Death Squad's first two defenses against the Hunter Brothers and the American team, Adam Cole and Roderick Strong, absolutely fantastic tag matches for two different reasons. The American team... That happened just after the Jimmy Havoc, Paul Robinson no DQ match, which was just insanity, basically. So the Electric Ballroom was very hyped after that, and then Roderick Strong comes out having not been billed, and then Adam Cole comes out having not been billed because it was an open
which
challenge.
Is a really big deal because Progress don't use fly-ins very often at all. 2015 was by far the most they used fly-ins. Prior to 2015, they actually made a serious point of sticking to European wrestlers. This year they've brought in a couple of guys for the Super Strong Style 16, and then after that, this was like the big surprise of, oh my god, it's Adam Cole and Roderick
Strong. So everyone was going mental, and then they just have this 10-minute, it wasn't really much of a match per se, just 10 minutes of them kicking each other's ass, basically. And the Sumerians and their crazy double team moves and their crazy strikes. Tommy End throws the best knees, the best kicks in wrestling. Like, there's no one better at the striking and making it seem just so impactful. Like, it hurts so much. End is fantastic at that. Dante works around him very well with his big power moves. They work together so well. And there wasn't really much of a structure to the match, just a lot of big moves, a lot of crazy stuff, and, like, seeing two big American stars going toe-to-toe with the Sumerians, like, really legitimizing them in their tag reign. But before that, they had a match with the Hunter Brothers at Chapter 20, and not many people had even knew who the Hunter Brothers were, like, in the ballroom. They got a tepid reaction when they first came out. Some people knew who they were. They're big on the Midland scene around Birmingham. But they're a fantastic tag team. They're small, yes, but they work together so well. I think
they have the greatest gimmick ever in Attack Pro Wrestling. Have you seen it?
I have not.
Okay, yeah. They come out wearing like building site clothes, and they're called the Brothers of Construction.
Amazing.
Yes, it's just the best. Attack Pro Wrestling is great. This will probably be the only mention we give to them on the show, so I just want to say, check out their stuff they're putting up on Vimeo now, because it's really good quality, and it's really fun shows, and they're getting them right up after they happen, and it's if you like Chikara, like 5-6 years ago when Chikara was cool and awesome, you'll like Attack Pro Wrestling. That's what I gotta say, but yeah, Brothers Construction, and yes, in progress, not super well known, but they certainly earned people's respect, right?
Yeah, they work as if they're four people instead of two. That's how I would say is the best way to put it. Like, the way they move around a ring, the way they work the tags, like, such good structure to their match, especially with the Sumerian Death Squad. Like, even though they're smaller, even though they don't look like they stand a chance, they manage to isolate one of them and work them down and really bring back that height disadvantage, that size disadvantage, and turn it into their own advantage because they're speedier and they're a better tag team. It really came across that way. And the match felt like it went longer than it did. It only went about 15, but it felt like a proper like main event length 25-minute match. And that's real testament to just how well the Hunters worked the match and didn't do too much, but when they were called on hitting a big spot, they really delivered. I believe it's Lee Hunter with like a fantastic facial expression when he goes for a splash on Tommy End, completely misses, End rolls behind him, and Lee knows that he's about to get a massive kick to the back of his head. Tommy End's like lining him up with like a handgun signal. And like just lining him up for the kill, and Lee just looks like he's shat his pants, basically. Just the biggest fear in his life, and then he just gets decked by Tommy End. It was fantastic. And just a very, match, very exciting.
Sorry,
match.
Go ahead, Holly.
Yeah, I'm done.
Yeah, that match, I'll give a little inside scoop. The Death Squad and, the Hunter Brothers, all very, very happy with that match, and it was quite the emotional scene backstage afterwards. They were all hugging and embracing, and they were just, yeah, they were very, very proud of that match and how it went, and they considered it like a really special night in their careers. And I guess it would have been October when I was over in Germany, and Tommy End was like, have you seen our match with the Hunter Brothers yet? I haven't seen it yet, but I'll check it out. And when I saw it, I was like, oh, that's why he was excited about that match. It was a good one. Absolutely. Really great all action tag. And, it was really good to see. It's always good when you see guys go in, not super well known, and then just totally kill it and earn the fans' respect.
Yeah, I really hope Hunters come back to Progress at some point. And get more well known, get bigger bookings than they currently do, because they're always killing it on every show I see. They always have one of the best matches, if not the best match of the show, every time they come out. They're super over in Birmingham. Whenever I go to Kamikaze Pro, they've got the Tipton chants. Everyone loves them. So yeah, I'd love to see him back in Progress and having more crazy matches. And it's great that they consider that match so good, because it really was. I have nothing but high praise for that. I would say it's maybe the third best tag team match of the year, behind Amigo Tag and
Worldwide we're going. Yeah, okay,
this is the third best tag worldwide. So that's how much I thought it was good. Amigo Tag versus Original Jimmies and the Strong BJ Twin Towers draw.
Good man. I was like, okay, I'm gonna press disconnect on this call now if he doesn't play the Strong BJ match. That's what I was gonna say. So we've kind of given away like our thoughts on like the biggest stories in Progress this year, who like the MVPs were, what our favorite matches were. So what I'm gonna ask you is, heading into 2016, who is the guy who either was still on the radar in 2015 or was an up-and-comer who is now ready to break through into 2016? Who is the guy that's going to really make a move this year in Progress?
There's a couple of names to consider. The first would be Pastor William Eva, who really came on strong in 2015. Like, he's finally put it all together, the character work, the in-ring work, and I'm really looking forward to him getting a proper go at it, like a proper 15-minute match to really sink his teeth into, because he's impressed me in these like openers, which go 7 or 8 minutes. He's always done very well in those, and he's really over amongst the crowd. He's a Projo graduate, so he's one of Progress's guys, essentially. So there's that sort of loyalty there, that sort of feeling that he's one of our guys, you know. And like, the character is fantastic. His entrance music is perfect. Depeche Mode. Reach Out and Touch Faith, Personal Jesus, and he works it fantastically well. When he revealed his CM Punk parody shirt,
I was going to bring that up. Blessed in the World, and it's, you know, the shirt that Punk had in 2011 when he came back after the Pipe Bomb promo, and it's like the fist holding the lightning bolt in the middle of the shirt. For Pastor's shirt, it's the fist holding a cross. It's so good. Mm. But he's really impressive as far as just how solid his fundamentals are for like a training school graduate that's like still in his first couple of years. He's just, his footwork, the way he moves around the ring, the crispness of the stuff he executes, his selling, all just bang on what you'd want. And like you said, I want to see him get a chance to have a real good 15-minute match with a top guy and see how it comes together.
Mm. He is in the Natural Progression series.
He's winning that, yeah, surely. Yeah.
Like, he's almost certainly going to get to the final at least, and probably going to win it, because he's the only one who I could see getting a main event in 2016, which I think is what they're building him up to be. Whoever the champion is at that point, Ospreay, Skrull, someone else, I think he could definitely hang with them, have a really strong 20-minute or so match, and really put him over as like a top guy in Progress. And so with that view, with the Natural Progression series, I think Eva is almost certainly going to be a guy who's going to break out this year, because he's going to get that step up via the Natural Progression series.
Names I want to mention actually on that, and I think I'd be remiss if I didn't mention these two individuals, because in the year that's in it where women's wrestling grew enormously with popularity, one of my favorite women's wrestling matches I saw all year was from Super Strong Style Night 2, where you had all this incredible talent from around the world, the best of Europe, all battling it out in dream matches, big time tournament matches. Honestly, I'd say one of my favorite matches that whole weekend was Ginny versus Pollyanna, Progress 2 female students, who this was their first time on a main show, and they had been feuding on the Endeavor shows, which is like the sort of tier down shows, the Progress run, for more featuring their younger crop of wrestlers coming through. And they had been feuding on those shows, and this was their chance to bring their feud to a main show in, I believe, a no DQ match. And it was incredible. It was such a great match. These two women, they're people who I would say to keep an eye on in 2016. I could see them doing big things if they get the opportunity.
Like, I really need to rewatch that match because I really enjoyed it. I thought it started off a bit awkwardly, like they didn't really mesh, but once they started to get into the spots, started getting into the flow, like it was really good. When Ginny like smashed Pollyanna with a kendo stick and it just like broke up in her hands, that was when the crowd went mental and really got invested in the match. And they got very violent with it, you know, tables, like all sorts of throwing each other into chairs on the outside. Yeah, really, really good stuff. But you know they can do better than that because they're still both pretty young, haven't had a whole lot of experience. I feel the more they work, the more they're featured on chapter shows. There's a women's four-way that happened last week, which still hasn't gone up on Demand Progress yet, but I'm very interested to see that one because it got some good reviews from the people in the live audience. So very interested to see that one that has Ginny Pollyanna in it as well as Toni Storm and Dahlia Black. So that's definitely something to look forward to in 2016, Progress moving forward with the women's division a bit more, because they only had one match in all of 2015 on the chapter shows, but they've been pushing them a bit more on the Endeavor shows. Like you said, they're having two women's matches per show on those ones now, and the women there are getting like really good reviews from people who've seen those shows. Elizabeth is another name who is still young, still learning, but people see real potential in her. So excited to see where they go from here. And they've certainly built up the character of Ginny very, very well. Like, she's very established in sort of the Progress canon as a character to watch out for. Like, she's got her character nailed down, trash-talking with the audience. So, yeah, definitely something I want to see more of in 2016.
So now, before this turns into completely Progress 2015 year in review, yeah, let's move on to another company. It was always going to be, I think, the Progress is probably, maybe with RevPro as well, they're probably the two where we've both been like fully exposed to this year. So like we might talk about a few other promotions later, which you've seen more of than I have, and some that I've seen more of than you have. But Progress was always going to be one where we had a lot to talk about. But so let's move on to one which I know I could be wrong here, Ollie, but I know I've certainly seen a lot of. I don't know how much you've seen, but it's technically my home promotion, WXW. Yeah, for me personally, so cool this year because I got to go over for the first time and do commentary on their shows starting at 16 Carat in March, and again then in August, and again for the Tag League in October. And I've been doing the weekly Shotgun commentary as well, a lot of the VOD releases, and some of the best of El Generico, which I highly recommend, is an amazing commentary. And I was honored to be able to do the commentary on that. But I would think, I don't just talk about that just to plug myself, but to also kind of, I think that is one of the stories of WXW this year is trying to expand and continuing their expansion, not only within Germany, where they're running so many shows. I don't think people realize how often WXW run and how wide a span their net is being cast as far as the shows they're running in Germany. They're covering a lot of the country, and now they're really trying to break through into new markets in new ways by having the English option there for various products, and by trying to market themselves to English fans as much as to German fans. And it's still a growing thing. It's still evolving, but the promotions had a very healthy year. They opened up a new academy. It's a full-time school now, which there's Big Daddy Walter is there as the head of the school, the head of the academy. It's his full-time gig. That's his full-time focus, along with actually being a wrestler himself. And yeah, it's a top quality facility, and there's good guys coming through. There's already a bunch of good guys that have come through the WXW Academy. The year, very well booked. A lot of good storyline progression. A very slow storyline progression. That's something they've definitely taken from New Japan. The guys that run WXW will be the first to tell you they're big New Japan fans, and there's a lot they take from that promotion and a lot of ways they try to model themselves after New Japan. And the storyline progression has been slow, but it's getting there, and the characters are getting more and more over with the live crowds. The German crowds that go to every show, not just in Oberhausen for the big shows, but for places like Hamburg as well, all around the country, they're really getting invested in the stories and the characters, and that's a huge thing for the promotion, where it doesn't have to be now like 2009 where they, to get any interest whatsoever, they just had to fly in a bunch of guys from America and Japan. Now they can do that, and it's icing on top of the cake rather than just being the cake. And having the standard of guys coming through in Europe really improve has been obviously huge benefit to them. Having guys like Tommy End, Big Daddy Walter be your core, Bad Bones, John Klinger, of course, as well, who I think 2015 was the best year of his career. And then being able to kind of like complement that core with some of the younger guys coming through, who like Axel Dieter Jr., like Ilya Dragunov, guys who are really impressing, and then taking in guys from outside and giving guys from outside a chance, like Tyler Bate being a perfect example, who they've used a ton, and they've turned him face, and the crowd love him, and I think he'll have a big 2016 in WXW. But as far as show quality, the shows I'm going to recommend are what you'd expect. 16 Carat in March, just an incredible weekend of shows. The build to the final with Axel Dieter Jr.'s journey through the tournament, Tommy End's journey through the tournament, and then the story they told in that final between those two was just out of this world. You'll hear my reaction on commentary to that match, and I swear there wasn't a bit of putting on enthusiasm or putting on excitement in that one. Like, I was going nuts for that one, and that was as legit a reaction, I can promise you, as I could have mustered up. It was amazing. The whole weekend was littered with really good matches. You had a couple of guys on the cards who were right before going to WWE, like UHA Nation was there, Axel the Axeman Tischer, who is now in NXT as Alexander Wolf, he was there having his final matches. There was a Bad Bones Ilya Dragunov shotgun title match, which is gotta be top five stiffest matches I've ever seen in my life. Zack Sabre Jr. was just a god all weekend. He was probably the MVP of the weekend, no surprise there. Candice and Joey were there for the weekend. They offered something different. You just had a load of really good wrestling matches. Timothy Thatcher and Axel Dieter Jr. was, oh my god, that match was so good. So yeah, Carrot weekend, not surprising, was great. The tag league, really good too. Super Smash Brothers, my boys, were over, and they got over big with the crowd. The crowd loved them. I'd recommend them. There is an episode of Shotgun from probably around late October, early November, where they have the Sumerian Death Squad versus Super Smash Brothers match on there, and another episode with a Super Smash Brothers six-man tag, which were both really, really fun matches that I'd recommend people check out, and you can do so for free on YouTube. But the tag league was most memorable for the creation of Zack Daddy, the dream team of Zack Sabre Jr. and Big Daddy Walter, and they certainly delivered what people were hoping from them. Their two matches on the final night, the semi-final against the Calamari Catch Kings, Jonathan Gresham and Chris Brooks, and the final against Red Dragon were incredible all weekend. They had their first match was against ACH and Tommaso Ciampa, which was really good. The crowd was just going nuts for that match, particularly ACH. Then later that night they came up against Sumerian Death Squad. That was really good. And then on finals night, they wrestled Hot and Spicy in a very good match, and then the final against Zach Daddy, which was just epic. So I recommend the tag league, which also had AJ Styles versus Tommy End in a hell of a match, which you'd expect from those two. So those shows are really, really strong. I'd recommend people check those out. And yeah, we'll be talking a lot about Carrick before I go over there for this year's upcoming Carrick. But yeah, it's going to be a good one. Ollie, WXW, anything that you saw this year that impressed you, or is there anything kind of that you...
16 Carat was fantastic. Like, I almost like booked a week of just watching 16 Carat and had a bit of like a party on my own, as sad as that is to say.
Nice.
Like,
no, that's as cool as it gets. I encourage everyone to do the same. Go have yourself a solo 16 Carat party.
Mm, because with...
Because if people are doing it in groups, then that's just less sales. It's simple economics.
Yeah. So, like, with the three shows, I just got, like, super invested in how the tournament played out. Like, I was one step away from, like, doing a whole bracket or something. And the matches there were fantastic. Like you said, non-tournament, but Ilya Dragunov, Bad Bones, was just... I needed a lie down after that one. It was just brutal.
They had a bunch of matches earlier in the year, just on, like, sort of tour shows, which were every bit as brutal. Like, there might have been like a much smaller crowd there in a smaller venue in, I don't know, like, I forget the names of the random places around Germany. I should know these, but they just totally tear into each other on those as well. There was one where they finished in like a double knockdown after about like 15 minutes of just beating the piss out of each other, and it was just a draw. It was so awesome, but yeah, sorry.
Yeah, Dragunov is definitely someone I want to see more of. Maybe have him come to Britain and just tear the house down. I feel like he would get over very well in front of like a crowd like Progress. But also matches like Zack Sabre Jr. versus Axel Fischer. I had that, I think, in like my top 50 of the year. And that was really strong. And like the first time I'd like properly seen Tischer. So... like a really great introduction to me for him, and I can't wait to see what he does in NXT when they give him half a chance. Zach was just superb all weekend, the Daisuke Harada match, and then putting over Axel Data Jr. in the semifinals. Yeah, really good stuff. I maybe wasn't as high on the final as you were. My favorite match of the weekend was probably Zach versus Axel, but it was still a fantastic final, and Tommy End once again looking fantastic. Other stuff I've seen, the English Shotgun, of course, is great. Like, that's an actual way of watching and following WXW for English-speaking fans.
I've been pleasantly surprised with how funny the skits have been. I know what you've thought, but there have been a few skits where, like, I don't know, I think I thought they might be more cringy, but it's like, they're cringy, but in a hilarious, funny way, and yeah, I don't know, the skit of Carsten Beck and his cronies in the jacuzzi together, just the funniest thing I've seen all year. It was fantastic.
Carsten Beck is very, very funny.
Oh, I was, it was the night he lost the title to Bad Bones in Hamburg, which is one of the hottest venues, crowd venues, or one of the hottest crowds anywhere in the world, that Hamburg venue. And that night when Bad Bones won against Carsten, I'll never forget the reaction by the live crowd to that match as long as I live. It will stick with me the rest of my life. It was insane. But after the show, I was in the bathroom, and I just heard just this massive crash against the wall in the bathroom, and just screaming and shouting, and then another crash. And I was like, oh my God, what's happening? Jesus Christ. Someone's having a fight or something. And I was like, I came out of the bathroom, I was all sheepish, and I was like, what's going on? And there was, no one seemed to be reacting, or there was no one, like, really... I was like, that was really strange. And I literally kind of didn't say anything, I thought nothing more of it, and then I was watching something back a couple of weeks later, and I saw Carsten Beck cut a promo after his title loss, where he threw several things against the wall, and he screamed a lot, and I was like... oh, that's what I was hearing when I was in the bathroom. Okay, that makes sense. But they had a really good year, and I'd encourage anyone that and yourself, Ollie, if you ever get the chance to go to Carrot, because Carrot is just a super special weekend for, it's like the closest thing you're going to get to a WrestleMania weekend in Europe, because they've just so many activities on. There's all kinds of cool things to do. In addition to the 16 Carrot shows, there's the Ambition show, which the lineup for that this year looks insanely good. And, I was really happy with WXW's year, and I'm very happy to be play a very small minor role within that company right now. I hope so. people seem to enjoy my commentary and my partner Jeremy's commentary. So we just need to find a way where myself and Jeremy can do commentary from different countries together at the same time, and then that would be great. I find it so much more enjoyable to do, and I think it's so much more better when we're there live and we get to do it with each other, versus when I'm doing it on my own. I'm inspired by Jimmy Barnett. I'm inspired by Jimmy Barnett when I do it on my own. I try to do a bit like him. So that was WXW.
I've been really enjoying Hot and Spicy stuff. Like, I hadn't really heard of them before this year, but Data Junior and DeMac, like, doing very, very well. I'd love to see them live at some point.
Yeah, because I don't want to say the best part of them about them, because that's totally shortchanging them, and they're awesome, and I love those guys. But one of the coolest things in wrestling is their entrance music live. It's the business, let me tell you. It's so good. You want to hear a crowd, just like, a crowd could be completely just deflated or dead or just not feeling the show, and then that music hits, and it's like, all in, just the crowds are ready to go. It's a great song, but we might end the show with that song today. Who knows? Let's see, Ollie. I talked a lot there about WXW. You want to throw something out at me that maybe you might have seen a bit more of than I have?
Do you want to talk about the RevPro shows? Or?
Well, let's go RevPro, sure. Yeah, RevPro. Let's go RevPro. I'll let you lead this one out.
Okay, well, this year they started their RevPro YouTube show, RevPro TV, and that has really pushed them forward from not just a company who puts on really fantastic like individual shows, but now they're doing a much better job of linking the shows up and having an ongoing storyline to actually invest in. They've done a very good job of bringing in imports, using British guys very well, and making it matter over a long period of time. For example, AJ Styles winning the title. He had his debut match for RevPro against Will Ospreay, a fantastic match, in February. Then he set his sights on the title, and they built that up on their YouTube show with, they had him have cut promos about it, and then he defeated Marty Scurll at Summer Sizzler. They have him cut promos again. He talks about how much an honor it is to face Jushin Liger, and they have their dream match on the show after Uprising. They had the little weekender in October with the New Japan guys, and that was a really special moment. More British focused, they had a fantastic feud between Jimmy Havoc and Josh Bodum. Maybe not the matches themselves, which were often like schmozzes with non-finishes, but just the intensity of the feud. And I remember I was at the cockpit taping where they tape the matches for their YouTube show, and there was just a solid 2 minutes of the crowd chanting for Havoc and then chanting for Bodum, just going back and forth, and like they almost like hijacked the show, just chanting for Havoc and Bodum after they'd like done a brawl through the crowd for like 10 minutes, like after a non-finish of a match. But they just had this fantastic brawl, and Shaw Samuels and Marty Scurll come out to try and calm down Josh Bodum, and both of them just go at each other. Really, like, hot stuff. And before this year, RevPro, they've been putting on these tremendous York Hall shows, but this year they started linking them up with stuff that really mattered, and something you could look forward to every Monday. They've slowed down on the shows, however. Like, there hasn't been a RevPro TV for a while, so I really hope they...
That's a question. That's a question I've been wondering. I know there haven't been many TV shows, but have they had cockpit tapings that they just haven't done anything with?
They had one in January with...
I know they had, the one that's just a turn of the year, and I assume that's definitely going to be used for stuff that they're going to put out soon, I would hope. But was there stuff taped at the cockpit sort of September, October, November that they just haven't used, or...?
I'm not entirely sure.
Because they might have... I feel like they might have done one tape. It feels like there's been a tape, aside from the January one, it feels like there had been a show there at the cockpit more recently than there had been the last TV that I saw, but I could be mixing things up. But it was working really well for them, I thought, at least for me and the viewer point of view, the fan point of view. Perhaps the time investment it was taking, they weren't seeing the return on it, but I don't know, I felt like a lot of people were talking a bit more about Rev Pro since they started that, and I think it really serves as a great promotional tool for the Your Call shows. I think it really served getting things over, like the feud with Jimmy Havoc and Josh Bodom, like you mentioned, the Matt Sydal stuff. Yeah, I think it was real useful, and it was the home to one of their best matches all year in the July Marty Scurll, Will Ospreay match, which, talk about it, a great match for an hour of TV wrestling. That was it.
Yeah, I saw that one live. I went to the June tapings, and yeah, that was really tremendous. And Ospreay and Scurll, as they proved this year at the January York Hall show, they're doing just fantastic stuff and working together very well. And you mentioned Matt.
Yeah, in case you haven't heard, people, that match in January was rather good.
Yes, it was. And you mentioned Matt Sydal, another import that they brought in and had him work with a British guy, Ospreay, and built just a tremendous three-match series. The first was in 2014. It was the main event of Uprising, and it was... It was a really good match, but not significant, I didn't feel. It just felt like, here's Matt Sydal, he's going to win, and they're going to do some flips, and it was cool. But then they brought him back for a RevPro TV taping, and he had another match with Ospreay, and Ospreay leveled him up with this one, 1-1, but he only rolled him up. I thought this match was even better than their first. It was, in the more intimate setting, but... That was one of their first
flowed better shows.
But really good stuff there. And that built all the way to the 2 out of 3 falls match in June at Summer Sizzler, which was absolutely tremendous. That was my fourth favorite match of the year, I'll have you know. And
yeah, it's one of the best matches I've seen live. Mm. It was incredible. Matt Sydal's performance was out of this world, and it's no knock on Ospreay. He wasn't exactly just baggage being carried. He was great in his own right, but this was Matt Sydal's career performance by far.
Oh yeah, definitely. And the way this match built, I loved it. Matt Sydal comes in, wins the first fall with his signature offense. Thinks it's going to be an easy one. He's going to school the young British kid who doesn't. He's in over his head. He thinks he's just obviously better. Subtle heel stuff. Really doing well, and Ospreay just makes himself seem so sympathetic by screaming in pain when Sydal's applying a really cool submissions to him, and just it all built to a crucible of a third fall. Ospreay sneaks the second pin again. It's almost a repetition of a feud to that point, and then they come down to the final fall where Ospreay finally overcomes Sydal and beats him at his own game. He does the lethal injection handspring thing and then flies off trying to hit a stunner move, the lethal injection. But Sydal counters it with the reverse Rana, the indie special. Just fantastic stuff. And I was jumping out of my seat. I was front row for this one, made it even more special. I would actually go so far as to say it's the best match I've ever seen live.
Yeah, hard to argue. It was just so it worked on so many levels. Just the action, but also the selling, the way the story of the match progressed, the way Sydal carried it as almost a subtle heel throughout the match, I thought was phenomenal. A little thing about it was Sydal was doing loads of Nigel McGuinness spots throughout the match, and it was just because he had just done a training thing with Nigel McGuinness, like in the week prior or something like that. Yeah, so he's got a lot of respect for Nigel, and doing a match in London after spending a bit of time with Nigel, he wanted to do a bunch of Nigel spots. So he had three or four different Nigel spots worked into the match. And another thing about it was that Seidel had literally like come off the plane from America and walked straight into this match, more or less.
Because he had visa issues, because Dragon Gate hadn't sorted out his and Ricochet's visas or something. And
It was they, from what I understand, they were going to Dragon Gate shortly after this, so they needed to apply for Japanese working visas. And to do that, they had to send their passport away as part of that process. And if you don't have your passport, you can't fly from America to England. And Ricochet thus didn't fly from America to England, because he was supposed to be on that card against Shinsuke Nakamura. And Seidel would have been in the exact same boat, but Seidel hustled his ass off, from all accounts, to get his passport back, to not make his original flight, but book a later flight out of his own pocket to come over for this show. I'm sure he had air miles worked up or whatever, but still, to do that without costing the promotion a dime, and then show up with the downside of, okay, you've just come off a plane, you might not be able to work as hard, but then have arguably the greatest match of your career. It's a testament to what a great guy that is, and whatever drugs he's on, because he was amazing, and he was just smiling all day long and so positive, and he was a ray of sunshine around the place, I have to say.
Yeah, and stuff from Seidel, and what you said about just walking off a plane and into the building, very similar thing for Zack Sabre Jr. at the Progress Super Strong Style tournament. He was in the middle of a tour for Noah, and between shows, he flew to Britain, wrestled four matches, and then flew straight back to Japan and picked up the tour without missing an event for Noah.
Now, you mentioned the New Japan shows in October. New Japan guys have been over on most of the big York Hall shows since they started, with the first one with Liger versus Devitt. But this was the first time where you really had... It felt like New Japan shows. There's so many New Japan guys on there. I know, Ollie, you were at those shows, and I know from hearing you talk about them, they were very special for you. I feel, and I listen to you talk about them, it's like the vibe I get, or the vibe I get is what it was like for me when I first got like the Noah show in 2008 and then the Dragon Gate show in 2009 over in the UK. It's just such a cool experience seeing these guys who are from a foreign land that you just never think they'll be over in your presence working shows in your location. Put it into your own words. What did that mean for you?
Yeah, I felt like it was almost like a privilege to see guys I was looking up to. Like, when I first discovered New Japan, it was almost like I was on a downswing with wrestling. Like, WWE had pissed me off time and again, and I was, like, looking for something new. And then, like, I pick up New Japan in 2013, and it's just, like, it opened my eyes to, a whole world of wrestling. So, like, I really do admire, like, the guys, Okada, Tanahashi, Nakamura, and even guys like Tenkoji and Ishii, and, yeah, just, like, and I never thought I would, like, see them live, so, like, seeing guys like Ishii, who don't speak a lick of English, like, and being able to see them that close, yeah, really special stuff.
What are you talking about? He doesn't speak English. He had a full conversation with me about a match he had in Masaki Nochizuki in 2000. Oh, no, wait, that was just me talking about the match, shining on, and him nodding politely throughout the whole thing. That was it.
Okay. I thought you were going to tell me that he speaks fluent English, but...
No, he just nodded and smiled and look in his face of, someone get this crazed Irishman away from me.
So, yeah, really awesome to see them. And in, like, full gimmick as well. And, like, I mean, I don't mean it like that. I mean it like treating it like a proper show. Like, not just, oh, this is a holiday for me. Like some imports do. Like, they were...
Oh, yeah, Ishii was getting all aggro in his day. Like, fucking hit me. Come on.
Yeah.
Jesus, this is getting intense.
And like matches like Kyle O'Reilly, Kushida, just fantastic. That felt like getting like a New Japan main event from the Best of the Super Juniors final, like a real special match for them, and planting it into the UK. They could have, some would say that's almost burning their match, like that was a big rematch for them, but they chose to put it on here and like cement their relationship with RevPro that way. So that was really awesome. And also seeing Okada and Tanahashi, even though they weren't going at it full speed, like just seeing them wrestle and then having the big Tokyo Dome main event a couple of months later. Yeah, definitely very like special to see that.
Yeah, part of the build for the biggest match in maybe New Japan history. You got a little slice of the build. So yeah, it's pretty cool. Any other RevPro points you want to mention before we move on?
I feel like they've done a very good job of building guys who maybe haven't got a chance elsewhere. Big Damo, I know he's doing well in ICW, but like I feel he really comes across like a star in RevPro, going against guys like Nakamura and Mike Bailey, like world class guys, and he really rises to the occasion there. The Nakamura match felt almost like that they were really trying to beat the crap out of each other there as well. Like they were going at it full force. And just recently, Pete Dunne, this isn't 2015, but in 2016, they've built him up really well so far. And I'm happy that he's getting an opportunity because he's one of my favorites on the Birmingham scene.
You mentioned ICW there. I'm afraid I don't have a whole lot to offer when it comes to ICW. I watched my one ICW show a year. Or I should say I got ICW on demand for one time a year, like I did last year and this year, and both times to watch the big, what is it, October show that they do?
Fear and Loathing.
Yeah, Fear and Loathing. Last year, I think I just watched Fear and Loathing. This year, I watched Fear and Loathing and then asked people for some match recommendations, and I watched maybe three or four other matches. ICW is not for me. I was enjoying Fear and Loathing at the start, and the atmosphere and everything, and it's like, oh, that's really cool. And then it kind of wears off a bit, and it's like the crowd don't really react great to the matches themselves. The matches themselves aren't really that great. And I just, it's not for me. I'm afraid. Did you see much ICW?
I saw a bit more ICW than you, but again, it's not really like my thing. I feel like it's too Attitude Era-y.
That's the way that it's so like it's attitude
very promo heavy, and unless you get super invested in the characters, I feel like if you can't see it live, then you're missing out on quite a lot of the experience, because it's almost like it is an experience, and it's difficult to translate that experience not only to like a non-Scottish audience, but just a TV audience, I guess. It definitely feels like a more like a live product than anything else. Although I will say they have been doing a good job with their YouTube channel and like showcasing people like Grado and Joe Hendry there, and like showing off that
Joe Hendry's awesome. Joe Hendry's my favorite guy.
The Hendry Ball entrance, cracked up at that. His entrances in general, boom boom, Jack Jesser's in my room. Like he's a guy who they could definitely build into a star, and like fits ICW perfectly.
Yeah, so we may not be doing ICW. It's we may be doing them a disservice with the amount of time we're going to spend talking about them, but while we are, we'd be remiss if we didn't mention that business-wise and success-wise, they're right there at the top. You can't say they're not. It might not be everyone's cup of tea, but they are a very successful promotion right now, and they're getting bigger as they come into 2016, and they're spreading their wings. I'm going to be seeing them here in Dublin in a couple of weeks, and they'll be sharing the weekend. They'll be running the Saturday. It's not a co-promotional kind of a thing or anything like that. It is very much separate, but it's just as it's happening, it's going to be like the biggest weekend of wrestling ever in Ireland, because they'll be running Saturday, and OTT, Over the Top Wrestling, will be running Sunday. OTT, I gotta talk about. They are my local indie, and they are kicking ass right now. We had the show a couple of weeks back with Joe Cabaret, Luther Ward, and he went into great detail on the promotion. We talked a lot about it, so I won't rehash all the stuff we talked about there, but it was a great 2015. They built momentum from show to show, and 2016 is off to an awesome start. The show I was at last weekend was fantastic, and they are really starting to do a good job building matches for the future. They've got matches built now for what's looking to be their sort of big show of the year, Scrappermania in March, the week before WrestleMania. That's looking to be a really big show. But before that, they have their Father's Head team show the weekend with ICW. I believe it was announced yesterday there's going to be a lovely girls competition on the show, which is just the greatest thing ever. And there's going to be a triple threat between Ryan Smile, Pete Dunne, and Will Ospreay making his Irish debut. That will be something I'll be
very excited
about.
What constitutes a lovely girls competition?
Oh, there's your youth shining through, Ollie. You probably missed that episode of Father's Head where there was a fair. And now I'm exposing myself as not really remembering the exact details, but there was like a fair, I believe, or something along those lines. And part of the fair was the lovely girls competition, and girls were just coming out onto the stage, and just the typical Father Ted people that would be around in an episode of Father Ted were all like, yeah, admiring these lovely girls. And it was kind of a rip-off of the Rose of Tralee, which I'm not sure if you're familiar with. The Rose of Tralee is a thing that we do over here, which okay. is hilarious that it's a thing that still happens in 2016, because it is essentially a lovely girls competition. So, yes. Who is the most loveliest girl? And they'll be doing one of those at OTC.
Yeah, I feel like I'm a bit too young for Father Ted. Like, I missed the boat on it by a couple of years, but...
Yeah, you know. You're probably... What year were you born?
96.
96! Jesus Christ! God damn. Yeah, that was like right when it was peaking, I would say. I'd say 95, 96, and into 97 were the big years for Father Ted. But let's see. I wanted to mention ICW because it's my local indie. What is closest to home for Ollie Court? Where have you been to a bunch of shows for? You mentioned the Midlands. Who are some of the promotions there?
Well, since I go to uni in the Midlands now, it's almost like my adopted home promotions now. But Kamikaze Pro and Fight Club Pro are probably the two nearest promotions to me. Kamikaze is in Birmingham, which is good. It's actually one train stop away, and they're running a show as we speak right now, which I haven't gone to because I'm lazy. Or is it tomorrow? I forget, but I'm not going to it because I'm lazy. But it is literally one train stop away from me, and I have enjoyed their shows in the past. They're definitely a sort of family-friendly PG company kind of thing. They run shows out of, like, a working men's club. So it's not like... Rev Pro or Progress, like it's a very different atmosphere there, but it's still good wrestling, good fun. And they tend to bring in about one import per show and sort of like have him be the headliner or her. And they've sort of gone away from using indie guys. The first show I went to, they had Chris Hero versus Marty Scurll, and that was a fantastic match. Then they also had Johnny Gargano come in. But recently they've been using, like, ex-WWE guys. I'm not really interested in that, so I've kind of fallen off on them a bit. But I will try to go to them more often, especially since they're so close. For Fight Club Pro, that's a very different atmosphere. Very, like, grimy club setting. A bit like Progress, but...
There's, like, a cage around the ring.
Their USP, I guess, is that they have, like, the metal fences and, like, banger board is what I would say. So if anything happens, whenever anything happens, everyone bangs the boards and shakes the cages, and it gets very, very noisy. And like it's definitely an experience. Like that is a lot of fun. The ring is so close to you as well. Like it must be a challenge for the performers to just like be able to pull off the match when everyone's just, like standing quite literally next to them. I would assume that would cause a few problems, but it's really like fun stuff. You get a bit boozy, and then you can't watch the main event because you have to go home to catch your train. Because inexplicably, they start the show at 8:30 and run two intermissions, so that it only ends at like 11:30, and the last train out of Wolverhampton is like 11:10. So,
There's nothing more stressful than being at a wrestling show and having to worry about a train. I have to do it once, and it's, I don't ever want to do it again. Yeah. I will book an extra night in a hotel room or some. Just it's horrible. The first Matt Sydal Will Ospreay match at RevPro Your Call, I just couldn't enjoy it all.
Oh yeah.
It's both for
that,
a train.
That went like about an hour over.
Yeah, because of fucking Paige's dad cutting a promo in the ring.
Never ending Paige dad promo.
Yeah. So, before we wrap it up, have I forgotten anything? Because Ollie, as I told you before we started, I had no real great plan or format coming into the show, and I'm very liable to have forgotten something obvious.
Well, we could talk about, I guess it, for 2015, it was almost like the year of Will Ospreay for European wrestling. He really emerged as like the guy on the European wrestling scene, especially with Sabre Jr. not being around as much. Ospreay really like went to the top of the non-import scene and like really became a superstar in his own right. Not just a flippy guy anymore, not just a high flyer, but like a really fantastic overall wrestler and someone who you can get behind, who's like so young, and he's going to get even better. And like apparently now the future holds going to Japan potentially as one of the things on his diary in 2016. I guess, what do you think about Will Ospreay and just how he's emerged over the course of this year and what's in store for him?
With Will, since the first time I saw him, it was like kind of, he's really good. He has a lot of talent. Gradual progression. Then all of a sudden, bam! Oh my God, he's like, he just shot up there. And it was, he just took a big jump this past year. And yeah, we talked about him on the, when we were talking about progress, but like you could see how much of an impact he had on Rev Pro too. And he just became such an in-demand guy around the country and across Europe. And it's only going to be bigger and better this coming year. As I said, he's making his Irish debut in a couple of weeks. That shows like he's just being places from all corners are just kind of wanting this guy on the show. He's going to be in 16 Karat, which
exciting.
Him versus Sekimoto, if that happens. Him versus Speedball. Him versus Tommy. Him versus Zach. Cool. Him versus Sammy Callahan. Angelico, so many guys that are in that lineup that he could just have a cracker of a match against. Guys that aren't even in the tournament that if he gets eliminated, there's great guys he could wrestle. Like some kind of tag match with the Hot and Spicy guys, like him and Angelico against Hot and Spicy, like that'd be a great match. They do like to do a crazy tag match.
Yeah.
Right before the main event on the final night of Carrot. I am saying this knowing absolutely nothing, but if I put myself in the minds of the guys that put that together, I would say Will Ospreay could be earmarked for that. Could be wrong, but he might get to the final of the tournament. I have no idea, but I don't know. I would not be surprised to see Will Ospreay and Angelico feels like a guy that might work. It might just be the match I said, which people will then be like, they'll be like, if they heard that, they'll be like, why did you spoil it? Could you not keep that quiet? Like, you never told me that was happening. I just thought about it and it came to my head. That could be insane. He's going to do great in Japan. AJ loved him. AJ literally grabbed Tiger Hattori by the shoulders and made him stand at the curtain and watch Ospreay versus Okada. AJ so went to bat for Will and just told New Japan they gotta use this guy. And I'm sure they would have come to that conclusion themselves, but I don't think, I don't think AJ's influence on Will, both from that and also from being in the ring with him, can be underplayed enough. I think if you really want to pinpoint a moment where Will took off to the next level, it was the match with AJ at High Stakes in February of last year. That was the one where I think I don't want to say the last piece of the puzzle clicked, because God, he's still so young. There's so much more to this puzzle that's yet to unfold. But a real key piece of the puzzle clicked in that match, and it's like he was off to the races from there. And when him and AJ went at it again, the triple threat in October, you could just see the chemistry had evolved, and it was, instead of being like AJ is the dominant veteran against this guy who was almost like him 15 years ago, it was AJ against a guy who was almost like his peer at this point. Just the growth that Will had had in those months with the Seidel feud and with his other big matches. I think he'll do really well over in Japan. I think his high-flying style will get big reactions from the crowd, but his personality, his charm, his charisma, it's the style of that that will go over quite big in front of a Japanese audience. I think they'll really take to him. I think that the bigger venues, you'll get the oohing and aahing to some of his stuff, and at like Cork, and I think they'll, and smaller venues, I think they'll really take to his personality. I think there's so many guys on that roster that he could have great matches with. He's already had great matches with several of them. The Okada match in Reading was spectacular, and I think Will could be a key piece of what could be a really interesting, exciting Best of Super Juniors lineup this coming year.
Definitely. I think you said everything that I could hope to say, but better.
Well, what we didn't mention is what the alternative could have been, or may still in some ways be, because I don't know, is he, are ties cut with TNA? What's the deal there? Fill people in, Ali, on what happened with the TNA.
So, as we're recording this, last night, he had a dark match against Mark Andrews, who's established on the TNA roster, but instead of it being one of their blow-away big-time matches, they only got 5 minutes, and reports from the show say that it wasn't that great.
They were promoting it like it was going to be a big deal on the show, and then all of a sudden it's on a pre-show and it's 5 minutes. So, and apparently, according to Dave Meltzer, it is because they are salty over finding out about his Japanese commitments. So, yeah, I don't know. If I'm them, position they're in right now, where I wouldn't be thinking being choosy is something that I have at my feet. So I would say, okay, we've got this guy everyone's talking about. People are thinking he is like the guy, the hot guy right now in wrestling. Now he has a chance to go over and make an even bigger name for himself over in Japan. They have a lot of big matches over there, which will only make him a hotter commodity. And he's going to be connected to us, and we can use him. Now, there'll be some hiccups where we might not have him all the time we want him, but we can still use him really well. And he'll just keep becoming a hotter commodity, and he'll be on our shows, which will get people checking out our shows. That would seem like the logical reaction to me. Throwing the toys out of the pram, it's typical TNA. As Dave pointed out on Twitter, it's Okada all over again, but it's even sillier because, like, Okada, when they had him, there was no buzz or hype around Okada. He was clearly an incredible talent that they didn't spot, but it wasn't like everyone was raving about Okada and while they were doing nothing with him. But Will Ospreay is on the tip of everyone's tongue right now. The hype he's gotten in the last week alone for the Marty Scurll match. And we'd be remiss if we didn't mention Marty as well. It's just what a year he had. Oh, yeah. But I like to annoy him by doing anything like that, bring out the villain. So we won't say anything more about Marty Scurll and his average year. But the Ospreay, he just, like, he's as I said, he's on the tip of everyone's tongue, and you have that, and you've managed to be the company that get him and get him into your fold. And I honestly wouldn't have predicted it. I wouldn't have thought TNA would have been able to lure him in, but they did, and then they've just decided no, they don't want to go that route. Maybe they'll reconsider. Maybe we will sort of see the other scenario where he'll do New Japan and come back and do TNA and also fit in his European. Because, I mean, TNA, it's just doing the tapings. Mm. So, and I guess the deal with their contracts for the new contracts is they're going to sort of send people out and collect the booking fee themselves. But, yeah, I don't know. I think they dropped the ball with that one big time, and it's the rest of the wrestling world's gain, because Will Ospreay, it's safe to say, Ollie, he won't be struggling to fill his calendar in 2016.
Absolutely not. Like, he's got big plans ahead of him, and it's safe to say that I'd rather see him in New Japan than in TNA. Let's put it that way. I feel like in New Japan, especially if Ricochet and Sydal stay around and he's had great matches with both of those guys, like, that could be fantastic. And seeing him against the native guys, if Kamuratachi comes in and we see Ospreay Kamuratachi.
Stop. Stop. Good lord. So, Ollie, I'm going to spring one on you here before we go. We talked about Ospreay being the guy that just broke out huge in 2015. 2016, give me a name, two names maybe, who you think could really break through to the next level. I'm gonna go first, and I'll throw two names at you that we've mentioned briefly so far. One in Germany, one in England. I'm giving you Ilya Dragunov and Pete Dunne. I think Ilya is so incredibly talented as a heel, and has a gritty wrestler that for his level of experience, he just offers some things that you'd never see from a guy so young in the business, just in terms of aggressiveness and the aura he carries himself with. And I think the fact that he's legitimately batshit insane helps. he is someone to watch, and I hope he really breaks through big this year. And then Pete Dunne, who I think it's pretty clear, if you follow Pete Dunne's social media, there's a guy with a chip on his shoulder, this young and bitter thing which he has the t-shirts of and which he promotes himself as. I think there's a chip on his shoulder that he has been ignored by some of the bigger promotions in England for the last couple of years and not been given a shot. And when he has been given a bit of a shot, feels he's done really well, and then he wasn't given another chance after that. And he is now, with Rev Pro kind of giving him a big chance, he's taken the bull by the horns. He's done great so far there, but he's doing great everywhere he goes. This guy is one of the most fundamentally sound technicians. And I don't say technician in a, he's not implying like he's a sort of colorless kind of wrestler. He is just, I use technician in the best aspect of the word, in that everything he does in the ring looks perfect. Like, if he hits a Liger bomb, it is Jushin Thunder Liger in his prime hitting a perfect Liger bomb. If he hits a brainbuster, same thing. His submission holds are all just beautiful. His strikes are fantastic. The way he moves around the ring, the way he chains stuff together, the way he works with his opponent. He is such a goddamn good wrestler. And he's a wrestler's wrestler. I think if you ask any of the wrestlers on the scene, they'll tell you Pete Dunne is awesome. And he's the Rev Pro Cruiserweight Champion. The Bruiserweight Champion. And he's been carrying the one place that really has given him a chance is OTT over here. They've really showcased him as a top guy, and he's been carrying their title now for the last few months and doing a great job with it. And I think, as I mentioned earlier, that triple threat that he's going to have in a couple of weeks will be crazy. So those are my two. Anyone come to mind for you?
Well, I would have said Dunne, definitely. Like, I feel like you've done him justice.
Oh, you're there, buddy.
But another guy I would say is Ryan Smile. If he gets a big opportunity in somewhere like Progress or Rev Pro, if they gave him the opportunity, he would like really take the ball and run with it, because he is incredibly charismatic, has some
crazy
moves. Like, he can do the dive over the corner turnbuckle and just land on his feet and pretend like nothing happened. Like, he has the just like the most arrogant face you've ever seen. He's fantastic at playing up with the heel mannerisms, and just looks like he's having an absolute blast doing it.
He's in a tag team called the Anti-Fun Police in Attack Pro Wrestling, and in a promo he spoiled the end of Star Wars, which went down like, I think, and this wasn't like the other day, this was like right in the middle of Star Wars fever, I'm pretty sure. So yeah, you can imagine how that went over. But his reaction to doing it was what made it awesome. Like, anyone could just go and do that and it'd be like, it could vary from working well to just being, oh, that was kind of cheap and cheesy. But for him, the way he did it and the way he reacted to doing it just made it, like, I thought, awesome heel work. But then again, I wasn't someone who was invested in not knowing what was happening in Star Wars, so it didn't bother me like it might have some. I just thought it was funny. Yeah, he's a great shout. And yeah, I would like to see him. I would have thought he'd have been a perfect guy for this past year's natural progression series.
Oh, yeah. If they're doing that again this year, towards the end of the year, that he should definitely be one of the guys in there.
Yeah, it would be great. But Ollie, before we wrap things up, any things you want to get out there as far as plugs? I know I mentioned a few things at the start of the show, but yeah, flesh that out. Yeah. Tell the people where they need to go.
You can follow me on Twitter, at AnotherOllie, all one word. I tweet about wrestling mostly, as most wrestling people do. I write progress reviews for Voices of Wrestling. I also do a podcast there, similar to this one, really, where we talk about British wrestling and what's been going on in recently. It's called BritWrest Roundtable. I do it with Rob Reed and Arn Furious, great co-podcasters to have, and we have a lot of fun doing that. I've also written for the Tag Rope magazine, which is a physical magazine. Not many of those around these days, but it's really good, like, great aesthetic. I wrote about Tetsuya Naito and his big change last year, and that was a lot of fun. And now I'm writing the European newsletter segment for F4W, which is very exciting, and I'm having a lot of fun doing that one as well. So check out the newsletter for that.
Yes, you and I am a big fan, big proponent of the BritWrest Roundtable. Love that show. Required listening, and yeah, we'll do. We're doing the European scene a disservice here. Only once a year coming on and doing this year in review. If I could talk about it every week, I would. But I don't need to, because the guys on the BritWrest Roundtable are doing such a good job with it. So, I would encourage people to check that out. So, we'll probably have a little interruption in our year in review series now. I think we'll be taking things in another direction. Long-term DKP fans will probably know what I mean by that with the time of year that's in it. So that will be next week, and then we will probably get back to very out-of-date year in review 2015 shows in a couple of weeks with, I believe, the US Indies and Dragon Gate still to touch on. So, yeah, that's the fall for me to plan and to map out, and for you guys to hopefully check out and enjoy. So thanks for checking out this one, everyone. We'll be back very soon right here on the DKP. Thanks for listening. Ollie, thank you.
Cheers. Disco sign! Man, alles auf Disco sign! Und die Party auf der Königin, das ist